I know it's been a crazy time out there, and everybody has lots going on in their lives. So I wanted to thank everybody for taking the time to join this important landlord-tenant town hall today. This is Riley Loggison. I chair the National Restaurant Industry Practice Group at the Davis Wright Tremaine Law Firm. I worked in restaurants in LA as an employee for many years and owner before becoming an attorney, and our team is lucky to work with so many on the call today and the heart and soul of restaurateurs around the country with respect to real estate financing and everything else. And like everyone here on the call, this industry is very important to us. And for many of us, it's, you know, we believe it's one of America's or the most important industry in America. And no industry, from what we're seeing, has been more affected by this crisis than restaurants. And so we're here for a landlord-tenant town hall today. And the idea was actually brought up by a landlord colleague of ours, John Paul Wardy at CenterCal. And we were having a conversation the other day, and he came up with the idea of getting folks together because, as many on the call are realizing, we have a lot of landlords and tenants on this call today, is things have been really confusing and messy and inefficient the past few weeks. I remember the first few days after things started to hit, our team was getting called to look at novel legal theories and leases, like look at the force majeure provisions and see if those can be shaped into a defense, or the doctrine of impossibility or frustration of purpose, and all these legal theories that nobody ever really thinks about ever, except in law school for theoretical discussions. And then it comes to, well, rent time. Rents aren't coming in. Are we writing demand letters? Are we starting to evict? Are we doing it? And legislation's coming in, anti-eviction and back and forth. And all of a sudden, we're all focused on things that are taking a lot of time and resources away from other things that may be more productive. We are stuck in the trees. We can't see anything. Are we going to negotiate each lease? Are we going to defer rent? Are we going to abate? Are we going to evict? Are we going to assert claims and defenses? Are we going to file lawsuits? Are we going to go to arbitrate? Government funding, is that going to save everyone? Is that going to bail everybody out? It's overwhelming to think about. So we need to take a step back. We got to get out of the trees, and you got to see the forest. And the forest isn't just tenants and landlords. The forest shows us the consumer, the tenant, the landlord, the banks, the government, and the virus itself. All of these are part of the go-forward equation. If things are going to work, all need to be taken into account in any go-forward decisions that landlords and tenants make together.
I didn't get that.
At the heart of everything is jobs. Jobs, 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 and jobs, and we'll repeat that to no end. I'm on a small committee in a major market, and the number one priority of this committee through the city is to bring jobs back as quickly and as many as possible. And this is the same in every city around the United States. Any arrangement on scale between landlords and tenants that will bring back as many jobs as fast as possible will resonate all the way up to the top. That is what will allow tenants and landlords to both get what they want coming out of this situation. That's what will give landlords the relief that they need so that landlords can give tenants the relief that they need. And this is where tenants and landlords working together as a combined voice for measures that will inspire hiring will be successful. This situation could be the death for restaurants and other businesses, as well as many landlords, or it could be an opportunity to get things back on track and work together to come back strong. Today on this call, we have over 700 groups from around the country here today. This is by far the most heavily participated in webinar that we have ever done. And it was put together within a period of 48 hours. And so the goal here is to get some ideas on the table between landlords and tenants, and then to come up with a separate action committee with both working together to come up with some model terms. So if anybody on the call wishes to participate on this type of committee, feel free to email me. My email information is in the invite. And we have a limited amount of time here today, and we want to get through it. We do plan to stay on time to respect everybody's schedule. So what we plan to do is introduce the call and kick things off with tenant perspective. Then we'll open up to questions and dialogue with the tenant and landlord representatives. And please understand, you know, we know there's lots of landlords around the country on the call today. We understand that you have not had a lot of time to process model terms or anything like that. So this is not a situation where anybody is anticipating final decisions of any type to be made. But this is an opportunity to open a dialogue that we hope will move things forward and allow productive discussions between landlords and tenants that will enable us both to go out and reach up the chain to get the support needed to get back to business and get these jobs going as quickly as possible. I would like to thank everybody, you know, who's attending today on phone, but also our panelists that have come together on such short notice to participate in this important topic. You all have information on the invite of who's here, but I will go through each before we jump into things. Bill Allen, former president of Outback, founder of Fleming's, and investor in countless exceptional growth restaurants across the country. We have Camilla Marcus, chef and founder of Westbourne in New York, as well as founder of the IRC in Roar. Danielle Bruno, who is president and CEO of Tender Greens. We have Tom Scott, whose company owns collectively over 180 Burger King and Pizza Hut franchises. And Tom and his investment group has also been in restaurants for a long time with other concepts. We have Kyle Cavanaugh from Made in Maine, one of the most well-known brokers in the business. And then on the landlord side, we have Chris Byers from CenterCal, who's head of leasing there. Jeff Kreshek from Federal, head of leasing. And Jeff Hermanson from Larimer Associates out of Colorado. And Grant McCargo from Urban Villages and Biological Capital out of Colorado. And so we'd like to thank everybody for joining today. We anticipate a robust discussion. There will be an opportunity for those on the line to provide questions through the Q&A feature. So if you have questions, feel free to send those along and we'll try to get to some. We have a lot to cover today and our time is finite, but let's jump in and get it going. So first I'd like to turn this over to Bill Allen to kind of set the tone and for the conversation with an overview. So thank you, Bill.
Thanks, Riley. I appreciate the opportunity to join the call and further appreciate everybody who's joining and specifically our friends in the landlord community. The reason that I joined beyond my friendship with Riley is that I'm actually most curious to hear from the landlord leaders as they share their perspective on how we're going to navigate this crisis. Yeah, I've been thinking about it. It seems to me that it's natural for all of us to focus on what challenge means to each of us individually. And while that's natural, I'm not really sure it's most productive. What I would like to share with you is what I view as sort of a collective view of the industry. And I know that the landlords here have their own issues and challenges, and I know that we're one of those challenges. So at some level, you know, we're all going to survive this crisis, but our best chance to endure will be if we can find a way to share the burden, it seems to me. So a few facts that I'm clear on, which I know, you know, certainly on the tenant side, everybody is well aware of. The restaurant industry had to shut its dining rooms down. It was mandated by the government. This was not a voluntary choice by any of us. Most of the leaders in the space that I've talked to, which is probably 40 plus CEOs of small, medium, and billion-dollar companies, you know, each one of them is in their own version of crisis mode, and they're preserving cash and they're scenario planning now for what the other side might look like. I think, as everybody knows, most all have not paid April's rent, and you know, quite honestly, very few of them are planning to pay May's rent. And I know that's difficult, you know, for our partners, for our landlords, but it's just the reality. The revenues aren't there. Many have remained open, but honestly, when you talk to the leaders, this is really about serving their communities and preserving employment for management and a few key hourlies at the restaurant level. You know, the restaurants that are open, they are sleep at dar, so that's cash flow without paying rent, neutral at best, certainly not covering any cost above the restaurant operating level. Most companies have laid off all their hourly employees, most management, and most of their G&A. you know, with the remaining support people taking greatly diminished salaries. Most of these businesses that I'm interacting with and talking to, and again, this goes all the way up to the largest companies that we have in this country, are bleeding cash. You know, Riley sent a note to me earlier today, and I know that we've all seen the projected failure rate at 20 to 25% being targeted in terms of restaurants that actually won't get out. But this article actually suggested that 80% of restaurateurs are unsure that they will survive. So this uncertainty is, I mean, it is almost unmanageable. Large companies, you know, many of them have the ability and drawn down on revolvers. They're also offering PIPE equity transactions to stockpile cash. But the fact of the matter is most restaurant companies aren't that large and don't have access to additional cash. In fact, we need to keep in mind that most successful restaurant companies that are growing are constantly funneling cash into growth and typically accessing leverage along the way. Therefore, the balance sheets are generally weak, and now they're fully leveraged. It is true that the government stepped in with the CARES Act and the monies that were available to small businesses. A lot of businesses have made the effort to access these funds. They're having various degrees of success. We saw the announcement yesterday that the funds are depleted. We're hoping that the government's going to top off those small business loans. Hopefully that happens next week. But I think as Riley mentioned, you know, these monies are intended to jumpstart employment. And quite frankly, the rules are fairly fundamentally flawed with respect to forgiveness. So companies are trying to figure out sort of how to navigate those CARES Act monies in the event that they actually access them, and trying to think through strategically, not really how do I get through this crisis, but how am I going to get through this year? So that brings me to that point, which is the onset of the focus was just to emerge from the shutdown. And now the focus is enduring through what I think most people think is going to be a prolonged recession and a lengthy build back of our pre-crisis revenues. We're starting to understand how our businesses are going to be phased into the economy as the guidelines have now been announced. Collectively, the leaders that I speak to are in agreement that the initial phase, which we have insight into, inclusive of masks, social distancing, bars unable to open, perhaps waiting parties sitting in their cars, might amount to 50 to 60% of pre-crisis revenues, maybe building to 70 to 80% in the fall, and probably taking a full year to fully grow back if they grow back completely. So I think we understand that landlords like restaurant companies come in all shapes and sizes, and in each of these situations with respect to our obligations vis-a-vis our leases are going to have to be dealt with individually. But I think two issues, to Riley's point about stepping back and taking a look at the forest, there's really sort of at a high level two issues that need to be dealt with, right? The first is unpaid rent when we finally sort of get through the shutdown. And then I think secondarily, what we can afford to pay going forward. The unpaid rent is a result of government action. That's our view. It can be resolved by government action, such as backstopping landlords, lenders, which was mentioned earlier, or backstopping the insurance companies with respect to the business interruption claims that many of us are filing, landlords and tenants. We should all be messaging hard to the federal government that those sorts of measures are needed. The path forward, I think, is a bit more challenging, but many people feel that sharing the burden once we open through a phased-in rent percentage agreement for the balance of the year seems most reasonable. That's what I've heard. And I know other people have their own views and opinions, but I think with respect to the two big issues, unpaid rent, which I think we're going to need help on, and then a rent going forward with a phased-in approach, I think those are the paths that seem to make the most sense to me. So I'll just conclude by saying, this is one person's view, but it is a view that's formed by listening to leaders of our industry. And I'll tell you that I, for one, am anxious to hear what others on this call think. So with that, I'll turn it back over to you, Riley.
Well, thank you so much, Bill. Much appreciated. And, I think, now I'd like to go in and hear from, our other tenant, kind of representatives on the call here about, the path to recovery. I think we're starting to enter into this phase where there are plans to come back to business. And, in terms of managing the expectations of landlords and tenants of the rent that's going to be due under the leases, this is going to obviously become more front and center. And that's why having this type of conversation is so timely, so that hopefully some type of arrangement can be made in place for everybody to move ahead, as efficiently and productively as possible. Maybe Camilla, I'll turn it over to you for your thoughts. So you've obviously been deep in the weeds on this and working with all your colleagues on the IRC.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And I think, well, aptly put, I think the situation we have here is far beyond the confines of individual negotiations. And I also understand that it cuts against every one of our capitalist inclinations, right? It's unprecedented times that I think requires unprecedented collaboration and government intervention. I am a total capitalist at heart, and I've been on both sides of the coin. I've worked for Colony Capital and CIM Group before, so I've been in both the tenant and landlord shoes and worked with Danny Meyer previously. So, I've represented big, small, landlord and tenant, and I think at all sides, we're in a little bit of a prisoner's dilemma. And if anyone's played out those scenarios, the only way to come out of this, I think, on a better footing is through collaboration, despite the fact that, inherently there's a little bit of, there's a little bit of adversarial contention at play, certainly. And I think someone mentioned in our pre-call, and I think it's right, to the landlords on the call, we hope that you're having these same conversations, with your mortgage lenders. I think that the banks are the third side of this tripod, and I think it's going to take all three to triage and make it through. I think it's tough from a macro level when you look at 2/3 of restaurants are independently owned and not large chains that do not have access to easy capital and don't have the float to carry this through. And, landlords, while I understand, there's the mortgage to answer to, when you're talking about dollars and cents in the bank and who has the buffer, it's certainly not the tenants that have the buffer. And the ones that are getting crushed the hardest are the smallest and the most independently owned, as I mentioned. And I think the tough part right now is, there's not an equality for a seat at the table for those people. That's why the Independent Restaurant Coalition formed so quickly and have been fighting so hard across the nation. I think from my perspective, there's sort of two or three things at play that I think might be effective, and again, I think it's going to take a multi-pronged approach. There's no single silver bullet, as we've seen with PPP. It's pretty untenable and frankly unusable. I've never before seen more people anxious to have money put into their accounts. Of the few people I know who've gotten it, at least half are considering paying it back and not using it because of the timing and the forgiveness constrictions around it. So, I think first and foremost, frankly, I think the system's broken in general. I think percentage of sales rent should be the standard. And I think one of the big reasons it's not is because banks don't underwrite it. When you're getting your loan, they only want to look at fixed rent, which again, I understand, but I think the government needs to intervene and change that dynamic. Second, I think there's an ability to provide tax rebates for having a food and beverage tenant. Food and beverage tenants are never going to be able to compete with, a pharmacy or a bank on every single block. The question as Americans and as the government is that really what we want? I think the resounding answer is no, both from a cultural fabric standpoint and safety standpoint. When restaurants are open late, we keep the streets safe. But also most importantly, from jobs. We have the lowest revenue per employee standard compared to other industries, but that's also because we are such high employers. Dry goods retail tenants employ far less people, which I think now the government's starting to see. I think they said about 60%, if not more, of the unemployment currently is from our industry. So it's pretty powerful. I think that might have to be coupled with a vacancy tax. I think there's no incentive, at least, I'm speaking from New York, my landlord told me straight up, you can walk. I don't care if it's empty. I pay less in real estate taxes because I pay on NOI. My bank doesn't care if I go to percentage rent. It's underwritten as zero. And I've got no penalty keeping it empty. So walk. And I get to keep all your leasehold improvements. So great. If you think of vacancy tax on the other side to incentivize negotiation. And then, like I said, I think third is some sort of tax rebate. It has to be made price parity for landlords to encourage contracting with food and beverage businesses. Right now, we'll never be, even at such exorbitant fixed cost rents, you know, in New York, you're talking well over 10%, usually up to 15% of sales, which is going to occupancy and rent. You know, that just, that math is bad and it doesn't work and it's fixed and has to change. And I think what was just said earlier is the other big issue is you have a high fixed rent that hovers around 10 to 15% in major cities, particularly. Now sales dropping to 50%, that's now going to skyrocket. That equals insolvency. And that's not good for anyone. It's certainly not good for the nation that needs to put people back to work. So, you know, those are the variables surrounding rent and occupancy that I think is important to think about collaborating on.
Well, thank you so much, Camilla. And to people, you know, on the phone, if you have questions, you can send them through the Q&A button. And if we don't get them to them on the call, we can circulate them afterwards and try to be responsive. Danielle, Tender Greens, very successful private equity-backed growth concept. It's been expanding quite well over the last several years. You know, as Bill had mentioned earlier, a lot of the growth brands are using their resources to open new locations and so forth. So there's a lot of misconception, you know, in the market out there saying, oh, you're a growing brand, you have tons of money on hand to, you know, survive something like this, which is, you know, often and not the case. I guess how is Tender Greens viewing the return to business and any of your thoughts?
Yeah. Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I mean, no, we don't have a ton of cash on hand. And the truth is, a month ago, that didn't matter as much because we're a profitable company and we were able to, you know, pay our bills simply with the revenue we were retaining. The world has changed even for us. And I think Tender Greens is in a better position than many restaurants because going into this, we had a healthy takeout and delivery business. But it was still, as a percentage of sales, much smaller than our dine-in business. So we've been able to leverage what we've created historically. But, you know, we're nowhere near solvency at this point. And, I mean, I think we all realize that this is no longer a one-sided problem. I think it's logical to imagine the future in which this only is going to be something that impacts tenants. I think using the prisoner's dilemma as a model is a great one. So I think for me and for the people I've spoken with for this call, it would be great to start thinking about some short-term solutions to help get through this. But as Camilla said, I think there's some long-term dynamics at play that probably need to be evaluated as well. Historically, leases have been written in a way that provide landlords upside opportunity with no downside risk. And rents often increase after a certain breakpoint, which means there's no ceiling, but there is a floor in the form of base rent. I think, you know, creating a floor breakpoint in which rent could be reduced by a certain percentage, even for a period of time during something not even as big as this crisis, but in smaller crisis, would create a more balanced dynamic, in which both landlords and tenants would have their incentives aligned. I think because that doesn't exist today, it's impossible for people to imagine a world in which we're working together, but I think we're going to have no choice.
Thank you, Danielle. And Tom, you know, we wanted to have your perspective on this call. It's quick service restaurants. You own, I believe, in aggregate, about 180 Burger Kings and Pizza Huts. It's a segment that, you know, seemingly has had the least erosion during this time. I think, you know, heard last month sales were off maybe, you know, 20% or so across the QSR segment. What are your thoughts on recovery and coming back into this, and how are you looking at your leases?
Sure. Yeah, no, thanks, Riley. Thanks for having me participate here today. So I think, as you stated, you know, we absolutely are in a little bit of a different place than some folks, you know, whereas I think many folks here are primarily focused on, you know, what the path is to, you know, reopening restaurants. You know, we are open, you know, we are, you know, for those brands, you know, deemed an essential business. But, you know, the way we're operating is obviously, you know, fundamentally different. So while we're open and while maybe different than, you know, others are probably beneficiaries of the PPP program, at least for the near term, you know, we, you know, we've got different considerations for different stores within the portfolio, you know, and just, we even see the extremes in our business, right? So on the Pizza Hut side, you know, you've got stores that are, you know, old red roofs and dining room sort of focused businesses that are, you know, significantly impacted, not too different than you know, other casual dining chains in some respects. But you have delivery and carryout that is actually, you know, doing well in this environment in many places. You know, the Burger King business a little bit trickier in the sense that, you know, I think you stated down 20. I mean, I think, you know, from everything I've seen, you know, McDonald's, Burger King, a lot of the burger chains, Taco Bell, others are down probably, you know, more in the 30% range. Last period, it's maybe mid 20s kind of trending right now. But depending on what your sales volumes are, you know, that impact and understanding, you know, the break even point for many of these businesses, you know, while we're operating, we're bleeding still. So we're bleeding and we can, you know, use those PPP funds in the near term. So that sort of gets us, you know, through maybe to a perspective that's a little bit beyond where some others are principally focused right now. But, you know, my questions and concerns are more about what the sort of back end of this looks like. And then directly ties back to, you know, what do we need to look at structurally to get to a sustainable business that ultimately just kick the can on, you know, folks' inability to continue to operate. So if you kind of take it all the way back to the employee perspective, you know, QSR is able to continue to maybe at a depressed level, reduced hours, et cetera, but still continue to employ, you know, a significant percentage of the folks that we have. But, you know, these businesses, you know, even at down, you know, 10 or 15% on a sustained basis, depending on what the back end of this looks like, you know, in many cases may not have sustainable businesses without addressing some of the fixed cost, you know, elements of the structure. And obviously occupancy cost is a big part of that. So, you know, we are in a different position, certainly interested in, I think, as Bill stated, getting some perspective from the landlord side as to really, you know, what is going on, what, you know, can we potentially be engaged in, helpful in pushing to create, you know, a better construct that would then allow for, you know, more sustainable restructuring. And I do think this kind of percentage rent, you know, structure, it does make a lot of sense. But, you know, my questions are really about, you know, where we get to, you know, later this year on a sustained basis. What does this business look like? And, you know, is it fundamentally changed in a way where the, you know, economics that many folks were operating under, in some cases stressed going into this, you know, the tipping point comes later, and we're just sort of buying time, at least for the QSR space, on a bigger set of issues, you know, as we get later in the year.
Thank you, Tom. Yeah, one of the things we're seeing playing out, and, you know, hearing from clients around the country, everybody's looking at their, you know, current portfolios of restaurants. And there's a very short list of groups that we work with that, you know, are looking to come back with all of their locations. Most are looking at this as a situation in which they're going to have to close, you know, one or many. And, you know, the question is, you know, and Kyle, would good to get your thoughts as somebody who works with a number of brands on the tenant rep side. You know, are you seeing, what are you seeing in this area as far as closures are concerned? And, you know, what does the market look like, or is there a market for groups to come in and take over existing leases? And, you know, would they be amenable to paying, you know, anywhere close what departing tenants are paying? Or is it too premature for any deals to be getting done at this time?
Sure. Great questions, Riley. But first of all, thank you for letting me contribute to such a great group of leaders. I feel like I'm in a 70s commercial when it's like the E.F. Hutton and everybody listens. When you get Bill Allen's of the world on the phone and the Camilla's on the phone, it's great to hear what they have to say, because it's value consideration from both sides of the fence. And we got some of the best on the landlord side contributing to this call. So it to me, I'm valuing this call in the same context everybody else is. I'd like to hear what the other parties say. I've sat on both sides of the fence as a tenant. I invest in restaurants. I invest in real estate. So I can contribute to both sides of the conversation. And there are indicators out there that we're all kind of trying to examine to determine where we go with this. What I do know is that we're better together. What I do know is that there are the pressures from landlords by lender pressure. And the only way that we're going to get that voice heard is to come to some unified understanding. And I believe that that's kind of the overall intent of this conversation as a group, is a unified understanding for how do we move forward? How do we allow for the voice to be heard? How do we reach to governance to have that contribution that would help take the pressure off of all the discussions we're having? So to answer your question, you know, the two questions I'm asked are, when are we getting back to normal, and what are the new normal, if you will? And two, what's going to be the fallout, right? And the easy answer for me on that is that when you look at a traditional portfolio examination, i.e. be it the tenant or the landlord, every one of those parties has the bottom 20 list, right? So the tenant has the bottom 20, and they always say, focus on the top 20, don't focus on the bottom 20, because you're going to earn greater returns on your time and energy. So if you take the 20 and 20 rule of that, you're going to have 40% of these landlords don't want the tenants to remain, or tenants don't want to remain because it becomes economically unviable. So the other fallout is, and then the other 20%, in my opinion, and when I look at portfolio review, is it group of those that have multiple challenges in it. And it could be co-tenancy, it could be a number of things, remodel requirements, whatever it may be. So collectively, it leaves about 40% of what should be in everybody's portfolio that should fall in line, right? So if I take the 40% to fall in line, that's really what my goal is with this collective forum. I'm already doing it with other landlords around the country to come to some sort of consensus as to what the easy way to move forward is. We don't know, but we do know, to what Bill's comment is, we should try to structure something based on performance. So what's that leave us with, right? If you take the 20% calculation of a tenant that's lopping off the bottom, and you take the 20% of the landlord, the number's somewhere between 20 and 40. You know, it's easy math for the restaurateurs to say 20 to 25%. And that plays into, before we have capital constraints of reopening, right? So the number's going to be every bit of 25% in my projection. I hope it's not 80. We're all in a world of hurt if it is. But it's definitely going to fall into that category, Riley.
Well, thank you, Kyle. And it's, the scope and the impact of this is obviously to be determined. I think, you know, the prospects of moving things forward into, you know, eliminating the substantial risk of closures is much greater with landlords and tenants coalescing and then looking upstream to the others for the support that really is, you know, needed and deserving. In this effort, I think in some prior calls we had some conversations about other industries that have been supported and bailed out as a result of this crisis, airlines and others that have been given billions of dollars to keep them afloat, and other industries that, you know, provide far fewer jobs have been provided far, far more than this industry. And with jobs as the number one priority, because if we don't get these jobs back, and, you know, the consumer is already going to be in a challenged position as a result of this, no matter what, the sales at the restaurants and other businesses will naturally be going down. There's not going to be the money to pay for the rent, among other things. It doesn't really make sense for a lot to even get back into business. So we're going to need to work together, and then we're going to need to looking at policies beyond this, which we are, to really get people back up and running as quickly as possible, and keeping the focus on jobs is at the center of that is what's going to resonate, as said earlier. But there really needs to be this, and there hasn't been, you know, I mean, I don't think there's ever really been a tenant-landlord coalition on scale before, but this is the time for it. And same with restaurants and others coming together, you know, behind this. You know, one of the things that, you know, I think would be, you know, really, really helpful is to get the perspective of the landlords on this call, especially as it relates to the idea of some type of somewhat uniform or model concept. I mean, percentage rent has been kicked out here as an idea. I know it's very early and obviously not holding anybody on the call to anything, but just in concept, would the idea of some uniformity be palatable? And any thoughts that our landlord representatives have on that topic? Would anybody like to opine on that?
Riley, this is Jeff Kreshek. I'm happy to take a stab at it.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to participate in this. And I've been furiously writing notes as we kind of go through this. And I think, you know, from a landlord's perspective, look, I think we can all acknowledge it's not my fault. It's not the tenant's fault. And there's a tendency to kind of overreact, if you will. And I use that word carefully because this is a uncharted territory that is causing a lot of people to react viscerally to what's going on. But there's certainly a propensity for people to say, we need to paint everything with a broad brush. We need to automatically go to percentage rent, or we need to abate rent or defer rent or whatever it is. And I think there's some interesting points that need to be addressed here. First of all, not all landlords are big corporations. Some of the landlords are mom and pops, just like some of the restaurant tenants. So they don't have a lot of leverage with their lenders. It's not as easy as simply going back to the lenders. And I think that, you know, from my perspective, I think that comment, while it's very important and very apropos, is important that the restaurants are doing the same thing. Are they going to their lenders? Are they going to their franchisors? Are they going back to their capital partners and doing what they can on their end? And I'm sure they are, and just like the landlords are doing it on their end. But, you know, it's the temptation is to be broad brushed. Let's go to percentage rent only. And there was one comment of, can there be any structure other than percentage rent? There's one question. You know, we're sort of trying to be a little bit more strategic. We've got a lot of things coming at us all at once. Yes, a lot of restaurants are short or are closed. Yes, a lot of restaurants are doing some sales, but not nearly enough to cover. There are some outlying cases, and they are outliers, where restaurants are down a little bit and trying not to pay their rent. I've specifically had one that told me they were down from $25,000 a week to $22,000 a week and wanted rent abatement. To me, that was somewhat ridiculous, but that's an outlier. But, you know, look, you can't paint it with a broad brush of the answer is go to percentage rent, or the answer is just abate or defer or restructure. There's other issues at play here than just my mortgage. You know, we have the visibility to a lot of restaurant tenants in a lot of our projects. First and foremost, I would tell you on an industry basis, we certainly got to a point where I would argue that we were over-restauranted in certain, you know, big, dense metropolitan areas. I would tell you that's probably more on the fast casual side than the full service sit down. But, you know, a lot of projects, landlords and tenants alike were culpable in this. A lot of projects started to put too much food in. So some of this was kind of going to happen, and some of the restaurant closures needed to happen irrespective of coronavirus. Somebody described coronavirus as the great accelerator. And I think there's a little bit of truth to that. So some of the culling needed to happen no matter what. But we get a lot of insight into restaurants. There's a lot of restaurants that were in good times not doing the kinds of volumes they needed to do. So changing them to percentage rent doesn't solve the fact that we have a restaurateur that maybe is long in the tooth, maybe isn't as engaged, maybe isn't as relevant as they once were. And so to simply abate or change their structure to a percentage rent doesn't address the root problem, which is maybe we have too many seats, maybe we have the wrong operators. Do I think there's a good conversation that needs to be happening about strategically how do we help restaurants? Yes. But the reason we're being a little cautious is not because of lenders and not because we don't want to be helpful, but it's because we simply don't know. There are so many opinions out there as to how things are going to recover, when they're going to recover, social distancing, what that's going to mean. Will the customer be back in force, or will they never come back to restaurants again? We just don't know. So rather than in a knee-jerk reaction, react today by restructuring deals for 18 months or longer. What we're taking is, let's take a little bit more measured approach. Let's get the economy back open. Let's get restaurants back open. Let's see how this happens. And let's make sure that we're doing what makes sense for everybody as a partner at that time, as opposed to now. Because I will tell you, I live in Los Angeles. And if you just read the headlines right now in New York, it almost sounds like the zombie apocalypse. You know, it's so bad in New York, at least sitting in Los Angeles, from what we hear, you would think there are zombies walking down the street. Well, I live in a suburb of Los Angeles, and the birds are chirping and the sun is out. So our restaurants going to come back faster in California than they will in New York. Our restaurants going to come back faster in Southern California than they will in Northern California. So if I have a multi-unit restaurant, where's the logic? Forget the incentive. Where's the logic to doing the same thing for every restaurant right now up front without knowing any of the facts? So we're trying to be a little bit more strategic. We are certainly trying to help out where we can. We acknowledge that this is, you know, it's nobody's fault, and it's something that we all have to partner on, and we're going to be better together. But we want to be a little careful about having a knee-jerk reaction that I look back 6 months from now and say, boy, that was a bad idea. You know, from the standpoint, there was one comment earlier made about a vacancy tax, and I do think there are outliers with landlords who, yes, they would rather have this space empty than have it occupied. I would probably, I think I'd be safe in saying that is more of an outlier, and that a vacancy tax, as a landlord, a vacancy tax to me makes no sense. I have no incentive to keep my space empty. As a matter of fact, I have all the incentive in the world to make sure it gets occupied and occupied well, but strategically. I will tell you one.
Can I jump in on just one thing, is the timing?
Sure.
I hear what you're saying, but I also think the challenge there is restaurants don't have time to wait and see. And I think that's been the problem. I actually do feel that most landlords, from what I hear at the IRC level, again, varying restaurants at different sizes, different types of ownerships, different city, suburban, et cetera. I mean, I think I see a pretty good cross-section through our coalition. Most landlords have taken that approach, and that's the reason I think that most tenants don't think they can reopen. I think without at least offering something short-term, that regardless of looking back and saying that wasn't an ideal solution, it's at least something. But the wait and see is the very reason that I think a lot of restaurants won't open, because we have mass payroll. What Riley said is true. This is really about employment. And even someone mentioned in the questions, and it's true, most landlords feel that they're entitled to the PPP. And if you get approved for it, they feel it's owed, when really that isn't exactly what the PPP was supposed to be about. It was supposed to be about funneling people off of unemployment. So I do want to say, I think the problem with wait and see is a lot of restaurants, especially independently owned ones, don't have 6 months to wait. And right now are closed or closed in some capacity, and have to decide, is it worth it to invest in reopening costs, which, by the way, are not insignificant, invest in reopening costs to make it happen. So I hear you, but I also don't think that tenants are operating on the same timetable.
No, I wouldn't disagree with you. We're trying to do something short term, as well as, you know, be very, very much engaged with what the long term looks like, but just not making decisions for 18 and 24 months out. I will tell you, we're actually trying to help fund some of our tenants to get open faster by helping them fund their restock and reopening costs as a short-term loan until PPP or whatever funding they can get comes through. We're trying to do that strategically. But again, it's strategic. It's not a broad brush for every tenant that we have in our portfolio. And we recognize that at the end of the day, we can only plug so many holes. There are going to be some loss that we just cannot cover, period.
I will also add that the notice on vacancy, by the way, also was resoundingly the majority across the IRC, regardless of location, that almost all of their landlords, large restaurant groups and small alike, the vast majority said, over half of their landlords said, great, walk. I've got your security. I've got you on the hook on a personal guarantee. You know, great, leave. I'll take the space empty and I'll ride this out. I don't need to make an extra commitment. I've got enough money of a buffer from you like I said, personally. So I respectfully disagree. You sound like much more balanced than what we are hearing at a national level. I will add that.
That may be unique to New York. I can tell you that I have had...
I'm representing across independent restaurant groups across the country through the IRC, not
mine. I haven't heard in all of my conversations with landlords across the country, I haven't heard one landlord say, yeah, we don't care. Let's just let them walk. I haven't heard that. But that,
Martha Hoover's on the phone and is validating what I'm saying. And she lives in a very different location than New York.
Okay.
Hey, Jeff,
beautiful Indianapolis. But
Jeff, this is Bill. So listen, first of all, I want to reiterate what I said earlier, which is I do find it very interesting to, you know, to get the landlord's perspective. And your comments, I think, are very insightful. But having said that, you know, I think I don't think, by the way, anybody on this call thinks that we're just sort of uniformly going to resolve what the resolution ought to be between tenant and landlord going forward for an extended period of time. I think what we're really trying to tell you is that, or at least share with you, is that, you know, from our side, this is, as you can imagine, super challenging. And, you know, a lot of us, you know, may not make it. But the ones that do make it are going to need help. And I appreciate, you know, the comments that you made with respect to willingness to help. And I also understand the reality of, you know, too much inventory in the restaurant space. Of course, you know, we might argue about, you know, sort of how that comes to happen. But, you know, because there's, you know, we all know there's, you know, diminished levels of retail solutions in these lifestyle centers, these malls, and even in transactional centers. And it's obvious, right, that landlords have turned to F&B, you know, to solve that problem. And now we find ourselves with, you know, sort of restaurants in a bad way. And I believe that, you know, most landlords don't want their space to be vacant. And to that end, I sit here and I wonder if it's not retail and it's not restaurants, you know, what is the answer? Like, how do you think about the future, the long-term future, you know, if in fact 20 to 30 to 40% of these restaurants don't make it, how do you fill these slots?
Well, Bill, that's a great question. And I think that, you know, we focused a lot on restaurants not making it and how important they are to the economy. And I don't disagree with any of the comments that are made, but keep in mind, before this all started, retail was having its challenges, and so were landlords. And I'm not making the excuse that for landlords, we're grossly overbuilt in the retail environment in this country, period. I don't think that's anything controversial or anything that hasn't been widely publicized, but per capita, we have more retail square footage in this country than any other modernized country. So the reality of it is, you talk about restaurants not making it, there's going to be a fair number of landlords that don't make it, period. Their projects are not fixable. And this, again, is the grand accelerator. And it's not just whether restaurants were going out of business, but retailers were pulling back. You know, you have to appreciate from the landlord's perspective, we're not dealing with this just from the restaurant industry. We're dealing with it from the retail industry, from the fitness industry, from the entertainment industry. There are going to be, Bill, a lot of brands that don't make it in every industry, and therefore there are going to be a lot of landlords that don't make it. If you own a B or a C mall, I'll be honest with you, if you own a B or C mall, your biggest problem isn't whether a restaurant's going to get reopened. Your biggest problem is whether you're going to get reopened as a project at all. You could lose 30, 40, 50% of your occupancy. So, you know, the restaurant industry is a microcosm, certainly in a very, very important part of this. But to your point, Bill, some of these projects aren't salvageable. We have too much retail space, which has led to we have too many retailers with spaces, entertainment, food, fitness. There's going to be this kind of impact to every industry. Every part of the real estate microcosm is going to get affected. And that's a really scary prospect. There are properties for which there will be no solution.
But the biggest difference is restaurants represent the highest private employers. And so I do want to go back to Riley's original point. This is a mass restructuring and a coming to Jesus of all industries, no doubt. And everyone is bleeding. but we represent the largest private employer in the nation.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's and Camilla, complicated. It's I'd not like just to dollars say, and cents.
Yeah. It's very complicated. I think we have to keep jobs in the focus here. This is Riley, because that's what's going to drive any relief to anybody here. So we're in the trees here arguing about the typical landlord-tenant type of stuff. We've got to think out of the box and take all that stuff off the table and be thinking bigger to get the relief and solutions people want. And the key to that is jobs and focusing on jobs. And that's, like I said, in this market where I'm on a little committee that's, you know, reporting directly to people that make decisions, if we're going to get support and relief, it's going to come through jobs and nothing else. And that's where the coalition between landlords and tenants, you know, and having some plan to be on the same page together, I believe can really make a lot of traction. I'd like to hear from some of the other landlords on the call here, because I know Jeff and Grant in Colorado have kind of a, you know, a unique relationship, you know, with their restaurant tenants, in addition to Chris at CenterCal. So maybe get over to Jeff and Grant, maybe talk a little bit about how you're viewing things with your restaurant partners in Colorado.
Well, thank you, Riley. It's, I guess my perspective is pretty interesting because I'm a restaurateur and I'm a landlord. And so I sort of have both feet in it, but key to the conversation, there's been so many great points, is that the relationship and what has worked for me in my whole career has just been collaborative to the point that I've even partnered with tenants in my real estate. And now as we come to this insane hardship, to get out of it requires that same collaboration and same relationship. Someone talked about culling the herd, Jeff, I think, and it's true. So when, you know, questions come about abatement and working with your tenant, there are some tenants that you recognize were having a hard time making it before the pandemic, and now this crazy time happens. Well, I think that the most humane thing that you can do as a landlord is to put your arm around them and sort of explain to them that the time's up. You weren't making it in good times. It's going to be a tough road to get through this. We don't know when we'll get back to normal or what the normal will be. And it's best just to move on. So I think tough love is sometimes an unfortunate contribution in the dialogue. You know, I think the percentage rent notion is clearly something that good landlords will consider, but surely not across the board, because there's this burden of underwriting your project and the debt component of our business doesn't get credit for percentage rent often. So it's not universally a good solution. I guess my final points would be every relationship is different, and there's both good restaurateurs and there's good landlords, and it's finding a creative approach with either to survive the situation.
This is Grant, just to follow up on Jeff's comments. It's, if you have a standalone building that has one restaurant, that's one challenge. If you have a high rise and you have one restaurant, you have a lot more flexibility to go to a percentage rent or abate the rent or restructure it. If you have a complex that's about entertainment, retail, in restaurants, and it's 70-80% of those uses, you know, it's like Jeff's point, if you were done beforehand, you probably should just go. But there's something called debt coverage ratio where you have to get the bank to sign off on letting them go. So it's not that we as landlords don't see that's the right choice. It's getting the lender to sign off on that too. And I think there's a transformation that was going on. I forget who said it, but there is an acceleration that's happened because of this pandemic. The restaurant industry and the markets we're in right now had grown so much that it wasn't an industry that wasn't facing some big headwinds coming forward. The labor laws are changing and the cost of labor is going up. There's a shortage of good staff. And everyone's stealing each other's talent and driving wages up. Rents are going up. I know, especially in New York, the rents were getting to a point where how do you make the business work? So an upset was going to happen. This accelerated it. I think success is tied to the word partnership that's been used a lot today and collaboration. And you have to go piece by piece. Is your concept going to be relevant in the new world? And we know it's probably an 18 to 24 months to what we think normal might be. But if you're in a district that's all about sports and entertainment, it may be longer than a year or two before you have 100,000 people walking down your street before or after a game. So we're going to have to partner with the restaurant tenants to say, is your model one that works in a new world, or how are you reinventing yourself, and how we partner together is how those solutions would be had. It's complicated though, because we all had partnerships already. It's a whole new lever of partnerships involvement that takes it in doing a stressful time. Are the landlord-tenant relationships deep enough and strong enough to work through that crisis? And I think that's hard. And it's also, if you're a landlord with lots of restaurant tenants, we don't have enough staff to manage all the decisions have to be made quickly at the speed of what needs to go. Because everyone's got a different problem or a different opportunity to work through it. And it does take time to get through that process and then get the lender to buy off or get the other partners to buy off. So it all depends on the scale. If you own McDonald's, which we don't own any, but if you own McDonald's, buildings that McDonald's are in, that might be easy to come up with a great across-the-board concept. And they are probably hit less than a lot of other restaurants. But most of our tenants are mom and pop. You know, some have been mom and pop that grew to 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 restaurants, but they don't have the economic engine or publicly traded. They can go out to markets or things like that. It's really a personal relationship and helping them solve those problems. And then also helping them decide, are you relevant? And if you weren't cooperating with us beforehand, because we were having communication breakdowns and your business was failing, the chance of us working on it is probably low. So it's all those things together. And I think there is no right or wrong one answer. It's going to be a deeper dive in the industry, what's going to survive in the new world, and how do we all help each other get there is where that opportunities will be. And if you don't, none of us will survive.
You know, this is...
Thank you, Grant. By the way, I'm going to extend this call 15 minutes, by the way. We still have a massive amount of people listening in, so we'll extend this call 15 minutes to get through more material.
Great. I really do think these tremendous insights that you are sharing with us as tenants, and I think it's going to be helpful as we start thinking about these conversations that we know we need to have individually, right, with all of our various tenants, that there is not a single solution. I would say this though. I think that if I was the landlord and if I had received relief from my lender, that I'd be passing that relief on to my tenants during, you know, this period of crisis. And I'm talking about the period of being shut down. And additionally, of course, you know, if there's government support, and I'm curious to know, you know, sort of how the landlords feel about, you know, where would they like that relief to come from? Would you like it to come from federal backstopping of insurers, or would you like it to come through the lending community? But again, if I was a landlord, I'd like to think that I would certainly share any relief on the rent side in the short term. And then And I certainly understand all the comments that were made about, you know, businesses that were failing or haven't lived up to their obligations pre-crisis. But I think what we're talking about here is, you know, there's just an amazing number of restaurants out there that are thriving, that were thriving, that are just down on their knees because of this crisis and the government action. And so I think that's what we ought to be focused on for, you know, the casualties will be the casualties. And I don't want to be cavalier about that, you know, but, you know, the bulk of the businesses, the bulk of the restaurants are actually going to come back. And how strongly they come back has everything to do with the restrictions that will be mandated from the government, which I think are going to be pretty severe, penal. But then secondly, you know, how our landlords work with us, you know, to probably take less in the short term and value the long-term relationship. And again, I just have to believe that it's in everybody's best interest, because I do not see, you know, what the leasing solution is if restaurants start to evaporate.
Hey, this is Chris Byers with CenterCal. Can I just add a few comments of my own? Riley, thank you for having me on this panel. I feel incredibly fortunate to be amongst such an amazing group of people. So, you know, looking back to February, all of our centers were comping incredibly strong, and no one would have ever thought we'd have been sitting here. So having this discussion is somewhat surreal, yet urgent at the same time. So, you know, we at CenterCal recognize that our restaurants are the lifeblood of our industry and our shopping centers. And we want to do whatever we can to get collaborative and creative to get our tenants and restaurants through this. And you know, like Jeff and Grant and Jeff also said was, you know, we're not just dealing this with restaurants. We've got other tenants and other categories that are the exact same position, and we need everybody back up and running for our projects to survive. So, you know, we're looking at everything we can to get creative. And it's not always just a rent conversation on our end. We're looking at how do we add more seating outside where patios exist. And, you know, just getting creative on all sides, because, you know, our debt service isn't going away unless we can come up with some sort of government action and relief there. And our costs are going up with the additional cleaning that we're having to do and to maintain in our centers. So, you know, the relationships are important, and our restaurants are of uber importance to us. So, you know, we are here wanting to figure out a solution that works for both sides of this.
Thank you, Chris. Yeah, from the tenant perspective, you know, I think it's been made pretty clear the desire to move towards some semblance of uniformity on some model structures, and certainly appreciate the perspective, you know, that Jeff, you shared and others on the individual circumstances and challenges. I think the reality that we're facing is Bill and Camilla and others have expressed is that restaurants are going to have to make decisions sooner than later. And with respect to reopening, whether it makes sense to do so is something that's top in mind, because, you know, with the cost of reopening, if you're just looking to open to close again soon, that doesn't make any sense. And the funding sources out there, believe me, we see the back end of these things with the concepts that don't have the big credit lines and the terms that they're getting from existing and other investors. You know, if they're getting any terms at all, they are not attractive. They are punitive. And when there's personal guarantees and other things on the line, you know, from the lawyer side that we and our team see on the dispute resolution side, even conceiving the amount and volume and sheer, range of litigation over these things, it's overwhelming. You know, and the courts are not set up to deal with this. ADR is not set up to deal with this. In addition to you're dealing with, you know, potential distress sales and bankruptcies, and like the hospitals are designed to handle, you know, the volume of patients coming in as a result of this terrible virus, the courts and other systems aren't set up to resolve the disputes that would amount. And this is all from our perspective, time and money that's wasted in fighting over lease issues and minutiae. As Bill had said and others, you know, there will be those that don't survive this, unfortunately, but a lot of those that would not have beforehand. There certainly was oversaturation in the space to begin with, and that's, you know, the consequence of time, which has been maybe accelerated by this. But, you know, at the heart is what we said, where the support is, where the need is from the community and the country standpoint is jobs. And the lower 20% of the workforce, those that need these jobs and need the food the most, are going to be largely displaced unless there's a way to work together, especially in this space with landlords and tenants. And I'll tell you, that's at the heart of these conversations, where the government support is and is going to be for a long time. So beyond, you know, the issues that we have between each other and determining kind of what's a fair rent, fair time to come back and these types of things, it's, you know, our duty to society to keep putting the effort into finding a path to job and opportunity for people, because, you know, this society is not going to, you know, fare well if we have 20% unemployment. And that's what cities are looking at all over the country right now. And as I think Camilla said earlier, 60% or so of these jobs are in this industry. We need to find a way to keep as many jobs as possible. And while I will tell you that rent and these things are one light item in a conversation of another economic factors that are pushing on restaurants and other businesses that are going to be addressed, because, you know, there's a number of states that have been, you know, implementing things over the years that have not been friendly to business. I mean, there's litigation in California, other things that take its toll on business way more than it should. And so there's a lot of things that can be put into a proposed slate of new policies in order to free up the opportunity to do business and be successful together. So don't think that tenants are only looking to landlords for assistance. This is part of a larger package of a collaborative effort to get policies in place that will get people back in work and keep businesses going. I'd like to turn it over to our tenant panel for any final comments that anybody has, and then the landlords before we close out. Any final comments from the tenant side?
Riley, not so much a comment, maybe a question, and it's been touched on the sort of, I think, the edges. And I think Bill, you know, a few minutes ago kind of was raising the topic, but if there's any perspective from the landlord side, just to better understand what conversations, you know, maybe taking place at this point, maybe it's too premature, but just understand the dynamics, you know, on the landlord side with their lenders, and related to that, you know, any sort of group discussion related to, you know, where there could be sort of commonality relating to, you know, assistance kind of further upstream that ultimately is going to be necessary to, you know, longer term kind of mutual restructuring, if you will, for the benefit of the broader industry here.
And Riley, this is Kyle speaking again. I think that, you know, again, this all came so fast to everybody in the last 30, 45 days. The best thing that the first 15 to 20 days was complete triage in the restaurant space for us restaurant operators, a bloodbath, effectively being forced to stop receipt of revenue. And if the government stepped in and forced the landlords to stop receipt of rent, I think they would have understood our triage a little bit better. So the best thing, in my opinion, is to get this education and then to unite, right? Like I said, we're better together. Once the landlords understand what we're up against and vice versa, we can broadcast our message to those agencies that might be able to contribute to this process, that might be able to take the pressures off some of the landlords, because it does come back to your comment and Camilla's comment about getting the workforce back in play, and if standing at arms does get zero progress. So I think the education is much better. Find a friend, find a partnership. It's open kimono from here on out. Let's talk about what the problems are.
Hey, this is Danielle Bruno. I do want to address the elephant in the room that was sort of brought up earlier around the fact that I think many of us agree that as restaurateurs, we can't use this crisis as an excuse for a poor business model or for, you know, a business that was generally insolvent prior to the boom. And so, you know, I think that on our end, we need to be honest about. I think that said, we need to know in those situations what landlords would do to let those tenants off the hook, because that is going to be a part of this. But the reason that's meaningful is because there are so many businesses that were wildly successful before this happened that don't see a way out. And unless there's a solution for those businesses, we're never going to find a collective way out of this. And so I think we need to make a distinction between those two things and find separate solutions for them. But in the long run, I think, you know, helping the businesses that were thriving to get through this is going to, you know, be most beneficial for all of us.
Can I jump in? I just want to add one thing. I put it in the notes on Q&A, but I'm not sure if everyone knows. I know there've been a lot of questions on this. I see it somewhat as separate, and someone alluded to it. There's an organization called BIG. I'm sure you've seen the headlines of Thomas Keller filing suit against his insurance company, but there is a mass movement for business interruption insurance, which, by the way, I mean, all tenants have been pushing from day one, and actually have it on good authority that the insurance companies have been working on blocking it since as early as first week of January. There's a lot of momentum around that. If you want to learn more, please do look them up. I'm happy to have Riley share information, but you know, again, it's one of the elements in this conversation, but a little bit separate. And I definitely think has to be at a national level, not really city and state. And again, it's going to come up to the government whether they want all of this to hit, you know, the courts, or they're going to help sort of come up with a more centralized way to settle these, because the litigation's already beginning.
Yeah, Riley, this is Bill. Riley, first of all, thanks for putting this together. I, for one, got a lot out of it, and I really appreciate, once again, specifically the landlord reps that, you know, would actually get on a call with us and have, you know, this kind of a, you know, free and open dialogue. So I hope it doesn't stop here. I hope we're able to continue, you know, to work in a collaborative way forward, but it was helpful. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Bill. And you know, any final comments from any of the landlords on the call?
One other challenge that we didn't really, this is Grant speaking, that we didn't really touch on is, when's the right time to reopen? Because we may be looking at a cycle where you may have to close again. So how do we, as partners with the restaurant or retail, look at scenarios that has enough resilience in its plan that we have a teamwork strategy if we have to close again for some reason?
Good question, Grant. And I think for everybody, it's unknown around the country at this time, and we don't know what might happen, you know, if we reopen now and a few months down the road. You know, and I think that's where we're going to need to look up the chain for, you know, support at higher levels, you know, in connection with an overall arrangement with government and banks and so forth, if we're going to be able to get any, you know, certainty. Because we have clients that have said they're out of the game, you know, for over a year in some full service concepts. It doesn't make sense to reopen given what they're looking at, the cost of capital to reopen. So, you know, you could have companies mothballed or involved in, you know, disputes around, you know, their leases for a long time that are just sitting there. And that's going to be in mass and on scale unless we find a way to work through this together.
Riley, thank you for letting me participate. This did not turn out to be the street fight between landlords and tenants that I anticipated. In fact, way more.
I came prepared.
Well, this is time for you know, I think everybody to throw out, you know, any preconceptions or past practices and working together. This is a new day. It's a new era. It's a new opportunity for landlords and tenants to work together, and for, you know, this industry and the retail industry too, to finally get the support needed to stay in business and to keep jobs going, because that is number one priority. If we keep that as the focus and we're on the same page, the prospects of that happening are far higher, and the prospects of everybody coming out of this are much greater. And we have a lot of landlords here on the phone today that are not speaking. You know, for those, especially landlords that want to participate in a coalition, if you're willing to engage in the dialogue with our tenant base here, please email me and we'll get you on the list. My email's Riley Logison at dwt.com. I know that sounds like a big, difficult name to spell, and it is. So if you Google it or whatever, it'll pop up, but it's in the invitation too. But please email me, especially any landlords and tenants too, if you want to be part of this coalition. But this is growing and it's getting bigger and it's very well entrenched and very well connected. And we have the ability to make some real positive change together here. So we're at 12:15, like this stick to time. We extended 15 minutes. And I wanted to thank everybody for your participation today. We're going to be holding our weekly webinar every Tuesday, as we do on the restaurant industry. And we'll invite all to participate in that as well. But thank you again for your time. And especially, as Bill said, thank you to the landlord representatives for being willing to do this. I know there are a lot of landlord representatives who, the conversation like this is premature. And from the tenant side, it is sincerely appreciated. So thank you all. Wishing all of you, your families, and your teams health and wellness. And we will see you soon. So thanks again.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Riley. Yeah.